Welcome to another edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm sorry. I hope you were enjoying that Umphrey's McGee as much as I was. I could really listen to that all day, but we've got bigger things on tap for today's podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish. As always, pleased to be produced by, actually this week, by John Solly, who's also our web editor at Pro Football Weekly and is filling in for Dan Mott this week. And we have a special guest as we continue our stroll around the NFL. We're going division by division. This week, we are going to discuss the NFC West, and we are lucky enough to be joined by Scott Johnson, who covers that whole division for USA Today Sports. He is the NFC West correspondent, also providing coverage at Sports Press NW. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Sports Press NW. Scott, thanks for joining the program. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me. I've been reading Pro Football Weekly for as long as I can remember, so it's a pleasure to be on.
We appreciate the kind words, and yeah, the pleasure is definitely all ours. Scott and I actually both contribute to the USA Today Sports Weekly newspaper, so that was how I knew that this was the guy I wanted to reach out to. I'm always reading his coverage in the paper, and now we are lucky enough to have him on the pod. So we're going to start with the Seahawks. I think that's Scott's particular area of expertise, and it's certainly been an interesting offseason in Seattle. A lot of changes. I think a lot of people probably start with the offensive line. At least that's what kind of jumps out to me, Scott. Losing two starters from a group that frankly wasn't very good for most of last season. What do you think about this unit and its ability to kind of keep Russell Wilson upright as Seattle seems to be kind of going to a little bit more of an aerial emphasis?
Yeah, that's obviously the big question with the team this year. And, you know, they have kind of quietly, they've acquired one of the best offensive line minds in football in Tom Cable. He didn't do that great head coaching, but he's been pretty incredible. And it's almost like they depend on him so much that year by year, they've given him, you know, less and less talent. And this year, it seems like on paper, they've got, you know, the least talent they've had yet. So he'll really have his work cut out for him. But, you know, that being said, last year, they really struggled early on, even when they had Russell Okung in there, their former Pro Bowler. And then for whatever reason, I don't know what Cable was doing, but for whatever reason, he kind of stumbled onto the right combination and they really got going in those last like six weeks of the season. They really kind of found their form, and a lot of those guys are gone, but I think it just is a testament to what, you know, how Tom Cable can kind of make a chicken salad out of, you know what.
Were you surprised? Did you think that Seattle would make a stronger push to retain Russell Okung? Obviously, he has moved on. Now in Denver, there were some musical chairs. And of course, Ryan Clady headed to the Jets. But what did you think about the way that his departure went down? And then obviously, J.R. Sweezy signs a big deal to head to Tampa Bay, too. And beyond that, what do you see in terms of their replacements?
You know, this has been about 2-3 years coming. The Seahawks sat down and kind of made some decisions a couple years ago. They pretty much took a handful of guys and decided these are our core guys. And, you know, obviously it's not hard for anyone to figure it out. It's Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, and even their linebackers, Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, kind of moved their way into that. And then, you know, guys lately like Michael Bennett and Cam Chancellor are coming up, and those are guys they're looking at that they're going to have to pay. So I think there was a period where they decided that, you know, the Marshawn Lynches and the Russell Okungs and the Bruce Irvins, and, you know, as great as these guys have been for them, they probably weren't quite at that same tier. So they paid the big bucks for their top line guys. And then they realized they'd have to replace these guys at some point. And it's a little different than normal philosophy in football where, you know, a lot of people think the left tackle is one of the main, you know, three or four positions on your team. And they had one of the key guys, a Pro Bowl guy. And they just decided that their defense was so important that they at some point were probably going to have to let him go. And so they just, you know, they weren't going to be able to compete with other teams to bring Okung back. And, you know, Sweezy to a lesser level was a real find for them, a defensive guy that they flipped around, and, you know, another one of those guys that Tom Cable kind of turned into a real player. And so they're kind of left behind with guys. You know, the left tackle was a guy named Gary Gilliam, who was a tight end turned right tackle and now left tackle. And he's had his struggles here, but he was one of the guys that really seemed to come on late last season. So I think they feel pretty good about him. A lot of the other guys, I mean, they've used a lot of draft picks in the last couple of years, and they're hoping a lot of these guys just start to come into form. But if it doesn't happen, they're relying on some journeymen, you know, some guys like Jamarcus Webb, who hasn't really panned out anywhere, and Bradley Soule, who was decent in Arizona, but not great. And so they've kind of got a combination of guys, and it's almost like they've got these, you know, four or five positions open, and they're just kind of throwing eight guys in there, you know, second year guys, rookies, veterans, they're just kind of throwing them all together. And and kind of hoping that these guys, you know, that they find the right combination.
Yeah, it is an interesting approach. And like you said, I do think they found a little bit of stability down the stretch last year, but it does seem like kind of a tenuous approach, if you will, given how much they have invested in Russell Wilson, obviously. You know, a lot of changes in the backfield, of course, too, with Marshawn Lynch moving on. I guess just from from covering him, what are your thoughts on no longer having Lynch in the locker room? And then what do you think about Seattle's approach? Obviously went running back heavy in the draft with C.J. Procise and Alex Collins. And, of course, before the injury, I know they were very, very excited about Thomas Rawls and what he was able to get done as a rookie.
Yeah, it seems like Collins is the most Marshawn-like. He runs in a similar way and stuff like that. But if Rawls is healthy, it's definitely Rawls' job to lose. And, you know, there really is nobody else like Marshawn, either on the field or off the field. And I know he was kind of a thorn in the side for a lot of media people that, you know, really wanted to talk to him. He seemed like he was one of the most interesting guys on the team when he did talk, but, you know, for whatever reason, didn't like to talk to people. And but he was, you know, that being said, he was a huge part of that, of that locker room. And I think, you know, whether it was intentional or not, I think bringing back guys like Chris Clemens and Brandon Browner kind of gives them a little bit of that, you know, old school edge that they're missing. Those were guys that, a little more outspoken, and they're kind of like Marshawn. They're definitely losing something, in the locker room, even though he was so quiet with us in the media. So, he was definitely a guy who did things his own way, but sort of, for whatever reason, he just commanded a presence. And even when he wasn't talking, people just liked to follow him and like to watch him. And, you know, it goes without saying how he played on the field. I mean, he could really set a tone, and people just, you know, watch him play. They played differently when he was healthy and out there. You know, he just would run people over, and you could just almost see the defensive guys on the sideline just being like, okay, we're going to get going. And so he was really a tone setter. And like I mentioned, Alex Collins has a little bit of that in his game. You know, Procise, I think, is a little more of a third down back, but if it gets like last year where they really were down to their last guy, you know, he could end up being the feature back. But it all depends on Thomas Rawls' ankle, I think, right now. If he goes into camp and if he's healthy when, you know, the first week or two of camp and gets going, then I think that he's going to be the guy. But they've got enough guys there. They've got enough options now. It's a little bit like the offensive line where they just added a bunch of bodies just in case.
Yeah, and I like both of those backs too. We had really nice grades at Pro Football Weekly on both of those rookie backs, so it'll be interesting. And then what couldn't you like about Thomas Rawls this season, other than the way it ended, of course. So what do you think, just quickly on Marshawn, do you suspect that we have seen the last of him on the field? Could you see a situation where he does get the itch and maybe wants to come back, or do you think that's it?
I'm not going to pretend to get into Marshawn's head because nobody knows what he said yet. I think the minute we write him off is the minute he'll probably start talking about coming back. But he seems pretty sincere in saying he's not going to come back. But he also seems like a guy who's, you know, whose passions run pretty deep. And we'll see once the season gets going and maybe he gets that itch, he might change his mind. But I would say at the very moment, he probably has no thoughts of going back. But we'll see where that lies. Maybe even a year down the road, maybe he starts thinking differently. And you know, the whole rumors about him going to the Oakland Raiders, I think that would probably be his best fit because he has such deep love for his hometown. So if he did come back, which I would say is probably a, you know, 1% chance, that would probably be the place that he'd want to go. But as of right now, I'd be pretty surprised if he did come back.
We are chatting NFC West with Scott Johnson. He is the NFC West correspondent for USA Today Sports Weekly. You can also find his work at sportspressnw.com. I saw Seattle obviously did some maintenance regarding their wide receiving core, managed to bring back Doug Baldwin, managed to bring back Jermaine Kearse. No one's more excited about Tyler Lockett entering year two than I am. What about Jimmy Graham, though? It's I would think has to be way too soon to write this off. What can you tell us about A, Graham's knee, and then B, Daryl Bevel and company's push to maybe trying? You know, it's tough. I don't know if you can get him kind of inserted into the plans until he's healthy. But what are your expectations for Graham in year two in Seattle?
It was such an interesting finish to the season last year because, you know, right when Jimmy Graham got hurt, he was supposed to be the focal point of the offense. That's when guys like Baldwin and, you know, particularly Baldwin, but Kearse a little bit, those guys really kind of blossomed. And it'll be interesting to try and work him back into the mix because it seems like they have moved into a little bit more of a downfield passing attack. And Russell Wilson has proven that he can, you know, he can throw the ball as well as anybody. And then, you know, trying to work him back into the offense is a little different than last year where it almost seemed like it was Marshawn first and then Jimmy Graham second coming into the season. And now it's almost like they almost have their offense ready to go. And he's kind of working back in, and that might be the better way to get him in. But, you know, the fact that he's not going to be ready right when camp begins, that might work out for their offense because they can just kind of pick up where they left off. It might not be the best thing for Jimmy because he's going to have to play catch up a little bit. And, you know, he's still a big time talent. He's one of the best tight ends in the game. And it's hard to say why it didn't work out. I think on both sides, they were pressing a little bit. The Seahawks were really trying to get him involved, and he was pressing a little bit to get involved. And of course their offense was built around having a blocking tight end. And, you know, now they got a guy in the draft in Vinette that does that a little bit. So they could have two tight ends on the field, and Graham could be catching passes, and Vinette could be blocking on running plays and stuff. So they do have some different options this year, but those receivers proved last year that they don't really need a tight end to carry the offense. You know, Baldwin in particular might have been the most productive receiver in the entire NFL the last 6 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see how he comes back. You know, he's not the type of guy that gets the big contract and then kind of rests on his laurels. He'll find a reason to go out there, and he'll find somebody that's doubting him or something like that. So I don't think he's going to rest on his laurels. But, you know, that being said, until the last 6 weeks of last season, there were some legitimate questions about some of these receivers. And, you know, and these guys are back. I like Lockett as much as anybody else. You know, Curse is pretty good, a pretty good player, and they're all pretty decent receivers, but they still don't have that guy they've been looking for over the years. It's just that, you know, the main go-to guy. Maybe Baldwin can continue to be that, but it'll be interesting how they move forward with these guys.
And if there was any big question on this defense, I know they've suffered a few losses. Brandon Meebane moved on, comes to mind. I think there's been another departure from their secondary. You can fill us in on that. But where, if any, is the concern? I mean, obviously, this is a defense that's led the NFL in scoring 4 straight years. I find that to be such a remarkable statistic. But just kind of get us up to speed on maybe the biggest changes and what to expect on that side of the ball.
Well, the big changes, I mean, they brought Brandon Browner back, but it looks like, you know, Jeremy Lane kind of solidified that other cornerback position last year, and he'll probably be the guy, but they might, you know, it's nice to have Browner in there for a little bit of depth. And then they did lose Bruce Irvin, so they're going to move Frank Clark, who was a rookie defensive end last year. They're going to move him to linebacker, and he's got some pass rush ability. And then they love Jerron Reed, their second round pick, and he's the guy who probably replaced Meebane. So they've got the bodies in there that would replace guys. You know, my question is, you know, Cam Chancellor had kind of a down year last year. Earl Thomas was kind of slow getting into the season. That was, you know, he was coming off surgery, so he had legitimate reasons for it. There were games where Richard Sherman didn't look like the best corner in the league. There were other games when he did. So I don't know if they should worry about that. But for whatever reason, their defense just didn't come together every week. There were a few games when they dominated. Usually it was when they were playing backup quarterbacks or lesser teams, but you know, their defense just didn't quite look in sync during the season last year. So it'd be interesting to see how guys like Chancellor and, you know, a guy like Michael Bennett, who's looking for a big contract, it'll be interesting to see how he comes out. And then, you know, guys like Jerron Reed and Frank Clark, how they fit in. You know, they've got most of the guys back, most of the main guys back, but, you know, there are some question marks because there were some moments last year where they were kind of baffling. You know, the Richard Sherman did a big play on third down in the fourth quarter, and you can't really explain that. So when their best players aren't making plays, that's almost harder than just filling in key things. So I think that's really something they got to clean up this year, is get those guys back up to speed.
And we obviously had a 2-3-4 year stretch where the Niners and the Seahawks was, you know, such a bitter rivalry and so entertaining to watch every time those two hooked up. And of course the Niners, who we'll talk about here in a minute, have undergone quite the transformation and have, you know, experienced quite the demise in the past couple years. What's the dynamic like between now the Cardinals and the Seahawks? Is it the Cardinals' division to lose? Obviously, they'll be defending their title and everything. But is it the same type of chippiness and nastiness between these two teams that we used to see between the Niners and the Seahawks?
Yeah, those Niners Seahawks games aren't quite as entertaining as they used to be. But I don't know if it's chippiness between the Cardinals and the Seahawks, but you know, there's definitely some rivalry there. I think this year we might see some of that because the Seahawks, for sure, that's going to be their rallying cry, is that, you know, everybody's picking the Cardinals, which I don't know is the case. It seems like more people are actually picking the Seahawks to take it this year than the Cardinals, but it's definitely the Cardinals division. They were the champions last year, and so they're kind of on the top of the mountain. So I think that's going to motivate the Seahawks, and I bet when they play this year, there's going to be a little more edge to the Seahawks. You know, it seems like the last couple of years, it's gone both ways. You know, the Seahawks have kind of, you know, the Cardinals beat them the first time, and then suddenly the Seahawks come back and just, you know, sort of roll over them. And there have been factors. You know, there was a backup quarterback a couple of years ago, and And there's whatever reasons, but last year it didn't win them the division, so that you could sort of argue about which team is better. And, you know, in some ways the Seahawks have proved it head to head, but then the Cardinals won the division. And then, you know, it's how far do they go in the playoffs? And then, you know, the Cardinals just looked terrible in their last playoff game. So there's, you know, you could argue it all day long, but it seems like the teams have been, you know, as much as they don't like each other, it's not quite like the venom that the Niners and the Seahawks had. But I wouldn't be surprised if that really starts to build, especially this year, because, you know, as many storylines as you have in L.A. and in San Francisco this year with Chip Kelly, those teams just aren't going to be on the same level. And you know, in past years, it seems like the Rams have always kind of been that team that beats the Cardinals once and beats the Seahawks once and sort of sticks around. You know, they're never really in it, but they're never really out of it. And I don't know if they're going to be that way this year. So it really is pretty obvious that it's a two-team race. And, you know, those teams don't really like each other. And I think they could hate each other even more after they start hearing more and more about each other all year.
So the Cardinals offense, the Cardinals ringleader and Bruce Arians, I love everything about, you know, the scheme and the personnel. There, you know, there's just an embarrassment of riches, obviously. But I can't skate the suspicion that I can't get Carson Palmer's January, that kind of funky taste, out of my mouth. I can only imagine how it's going for him. Should that still be lingering? Do you have any concerns that maybe it will, and that we've seen the best from Palmer already? I mean, again, he's got so much to work with. There's as much reason to think he's going to pick up right where he left off in, say, November. But how do you sort of forecast Palmer and that offense heading into this year? And Palmer specifically now, as he's obviously coming off the disappointing finish and has had a hard time staying healthy multiple seasons throughout his career.
You know, I find myself feeling exactly like I did last year, where I'm thinking, okay, you know, Palmer sort of showed at the end of the year that age is catching up with him and this and that. But, you know, this time last year, there were even bigger questions coming off the surgery and everything, and he had his best year as a pro. So you never want to doubt him. You know, he's obviously he's probably the key to the entire division. If he stays healthy, then I definitely think for sure that the Cardinals are the team to beat. And, you know, they'd be the favorite, and they'd probably go and win the division. But, you know, I don't know if his production would stay up. For me, it was hard to disseminate last year whether, you know, he gets a late start. I mean, he was there for the start of training camp, but he was pretty much rehabbing. And then it almost just looked like not just the NFC Championship game, which was absolutely awful, but there were a couple games before that where he was pretty shaky too. You know, that Green Bay game, they sort of came back at the end. And I think it was the season finale. They played Seattle and he was terrible. So it just felt like he just ran out of gas at the end. And that's oversimplifying it, I know. But, you know, given his age and late start and the knee and all that, it just really did feel like everything kind of fell apart for him at the end. And it might not just have been, you know, people just think of it as a one-game thing with the NFC Championship game, but pretty much after December, he was a different quarterback for whatever reason, and I'm the same as you. It's hard for me to get that out of my head. And, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, same thing. He's I wouldn't say he's old, but he's in his 30s, and he had another unbelievable year, probably his best year, but you have to question how long can he keep it up. And, you know, guys like Chris Johnson and Dwight Freeney came off the street and helped them out last year. So they've got so much talent, especially at receiver, and they've got so many safeties, and they have a lot of great things for them, but they relied on a lot of these guys that are sort of, you know, one foot over the hill, I guess. So that's my biggest question with the Cardinals coming in. Palmer's the biggest one, but guys like Palmer and, you know, can Chris Johnson do anything? And is Larry Fitzgerald going to play like this his whole career? So there's definitely some question marks in terms of getting Grand two for that team.
And we're here in Chicago. I cover the Bears pretty closely, and it seems a lot of Bears fans are kind of celebrating the arrival of Bobby Massey and, to a lesser extent, Ted Larson. But it didn't really seem like the Cardinals made a really strong push to retain those guys. That's an offensive line with a lot of turnover. I assume DJ Humphreys, the 2015 first rounder, will now be penciled in. Do you think that unit's going to be okay? Obviously also lost Jonathan Cooper in the big Chandler Jones trade.
Yeah, there's another, you know, aging guy, Evan Mathis, they're going to be relying on. They brought him in to replace Cooper, I think, on that side. So they've got some questions on the offensive line, but I think they're almost better suited. In the past few years, it seems like that's been their weakness, and they've kind of quietly used some draft picks and shored that up, and they've gotten some depth there. And so I think that coming to this offseason, they finally felt comfortable with some of those guys leaving. And, you know, guys like Ted Larson were serviceable, but I'm not sure he was – you know, he's not a Pro Bowl guy or anything like that. So I think the guys that they had behind them were very similar in talent, and they felt comfortable letting those guys go. So, you know, it's kind of strange that they lose a couple guys, but it almost seems like their offensive line is less of a question mark now than it was last year and the year before that.
Do you know anything about the, that is interesting. Do you know anything about the, Is there any negotiations going on with either Tyrann Mathieu? I knew that they were going to talk, but obviously he's got the ACL he's trying to recover from. And then I'm trying to think, I guess actually Chandler Jones wouldn't be eligible for a new deal until after the season. Is that right? Or can they talk to him yet? I assume he's not going to be a one-year rental. Kind of gave up a lot for it to be that type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, they are kind of in a position, if he is a one-year rental, that they're in that position. You know, like I said, there's some aging guys, and they really have to go for it this year. So that's obviously not what they want to do, but they could be in that case. A lot of times when teams make a deal like that, getting a big player like that, you hear the contract getting renegotiated and getting, you know, a long-term deal like Percy Harvin did in Seattle a couple years ago, and that happens right out of the gate. And since we haven't heard that yet, I don't know if that's a red flag or anything, or I don't know if they're not allowed to negotiate or anything, but they've, you know, those are some of the guys that they're going to have to be counting on for the future. I mean, Mathieu has really become a huge part of their defense, and it is a position of strength at safety, so that might handle negotiations. But there's a lot of safeties out there that are kind of looking at deals, and there's some, you know, some of the guys that signed last year, I think, got some really big deals, and it's kind of changed how they look at it. So I'm sure that's going to be a negotiation that goes on all season. I don't know if Mathieu is looking to be the highest paid safety, but you know, he hasn't, between injuries and just production, he hasn't quite proven he's at that level yet. But I could see where he'd come at them and say, this is what I want.
And he might, with his versatility, be the latest to kind of make an argument, okay, I maybe want to be paid like a corner instead, just because he does so much in that secondary.
Yeah, and they've got, you know, all their corners do a lot of things. You know, they do a little linebacker, they do a little safety, they do cover. You know, it seems like once they got Mathieu, then they were able to, it changed the whole defense. With Mathieu in there, he can do so many things that they can move, you know, a guy like Deion Buchanan can play some linebacker, and then they can, you know, they had all sorts of guys that were, you know, Rashad Johnson probably was the best of all of them last year. And, you know, Jefferson was great. And it seemed like they just brought in these, you know, safety after safety last year that had sacks and interceptions and were just doing everything. And they're coming from all sides. And without a guy like Mathieu, you can't do that. And so he really is a big part of what they do. And I think it was not this year, but the year before when he got hurt in, I think, the week 16 game or week 17 game. And then it totally affected their defense in the playoffs. So I think he's a huge part of what they like to do on defense, and they are so versatile on defense that they need all those guys. There's not many guys like Tyrann Mathieu out there, and so if you've got the Honey Badger on your team, you definitely want to keep him around.
Yeah, no doubt. One of my favorite to watch play in the league just because of that versatility, and he just plays so much bigger than his size. We're spending a couple more minutes chatting here, talking NFC West with the USA Today Sports NFC West correspondent, Scott Johnson. Find him on Twitter at SportsPressNW. Scott, I will close the Cardinals discussion by, you actually made a good segue there. You mentioned Rashad Johnson. I believe he is now in Tennessee. I know they lost Jerod Powers as well. Are we making enough of all the turnover in the secondary? Are there guys there that are ready to kind of step up into expanded roles? I know, as you just alluded to, how much James Betcher relies on those guys.
I mean, they were so deep at that safety position that you could almost say that they could had a guy to, you know, they're used four or five safeties a game, so they were expendable. But you know, it just seemed like he was probably the most productive of them quietly. You know, everybody knows about Honey Badger, and even you talk about Patrick Peterson, but it almost seems like their secondary last year that you know, kind of quietly, he was the guy. Rashad Johnson was the guy making the most plays, and he really was a breakout season for him. And so I think losing him is going to be a bigger deal than we thought. But they have guys in Jefferson and other guys like that. They have plenty of bodies that can fill in, and those are good players. They're not, you know, this isn't just you know, chopped liver coming in. So they've got some players, but I don't know, Rashad Johnson, the way he played last year was so big for them that it'll be interesting to see how they do that. They might just, you know, it might just mean that Honey Badger does some other things and Jefferson does some other things, and they might just have to fill in his roles in other ways and play and be on the field more. But you know, let's not just forget about that loss, because I think you're right. I think that's going to be one that's going to affect him in some way.
Scott, do you think Todd Gurley is ready to kind of take the mantle from Kobe Bryant as LA's next ultra celebrity sports star? And I guess much more importantly to the Rams, you know, 2016 outlook, is he ready to carry that offense for 16 games? Because it doesn't look like it's going to be a good transition in terms of just what there is to work with for Jared Goff whenever they do, you know, give him the keys.
Yeah, he's got a lot on his shoulders. You know, you mentioned Kobe, and then, you know, Clayton Kershaw is down now. And so they're hungry for a sports star right now. And Gurley seems like the guy. I mean, maybe in 3 years, Jared Goff is the guy, but there's going to be a lot of eyes on Gurley. And you know, it's a little different than it was. Their defense still should be good. They've still got a few guys, but they've had a lot of turnover on defense. And so I don't know if they'll be quite the team that, you know, Jeff Fisher envisioned, where he just wanted this dominant defense and a really good running back. He finally got the running back, and now the defensive guys are going. But, you know, with whoever's at quarterback, and maybe, you know, maybe Goff is the starter in week one, and unlike Fisher says, but whoever's back there, it's going to take a little while for them to get going. And Gurley's really going to have to carry that offense. And, you know, last year he proved that his knee held up, and he proved that he was everything everybody said he was going to be. And so I think there's a lot of eyes on him. You know, there's guys like Adrian Peterson that are getting old, and Jamal Charles and stuff. So we're sort of looking for that next great running back. You know, Marshawn Lynch is gone. So I think everybody, all signs are pointing toward Todd Gurley being the NFL's next great running back, and maybe LA's next great star. But, you know, he doesn't have a great line in front of him. He doesn't have they don't have a great passing game. So there's a lot of things that have to happen before he can be a star. You can't just anoint him, but he could be that if he's able to play like he's capable of.
And those reasons you just mentioned are I'm a fantasy football guy too. And Todd Gurley just scares me this year. I don't know how he's going to be able to run against 9 and 10 man fronts, but we'll have to wait and see. What does your hunch tell you regarding Goff and how quickly he gets on the field? And what's the leash like for Jeff Fisher? I mean, he's been off a leash his entire career because he seemingly can do whatever he wants and he's always safe. But now that they have the new digs and everyone's so excited about the move to LA, does the patience start to wear a little bit thinner with Kroenke with regard to Jeff Fisher and another potentially sub 500 or right at 500 season?
Yeah, it has been interesting how Fisher's been able to stay out of that. I don't know if playing in St. Louis helped him, but you know, he had a few years there where he would beat one of the top teams early on, and the Rams suddenly by midseason, everybody was talking about the Rams maybe getting in the playoff mix, and then things would fall apart. They'd have a couple ugly losses, and they were just such an up and down team that his career in St. Louis was pretty much the kind of career that gets most coaches fired. And so I don't know if it's just because he's been around a while, or, you know, he never really had the quarterback, or Bradford was hurt for a while. I mean, there were always kind of excuses why it wasn't working out, but you know, it came to the point where I think last year I was kind of wondering that, like, he's like a cockroach. Nobody's ever mentioned his job security at all. And I think what happens when teams, you know, not just when they change towns, but when they have a new, you know, maybe a new GM come in, or they have some kind of change, it seems like there's kind of that 1 year honeymoon period. And I'm sure they're in that now. I'm sure this is going to become LA's team this time next year. And so if Fisher doesn't, you know, come out and do one of his better coaching jobs and really, you know, really kind of make some noise and battle for a division title, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if he was let go, and if, you know, suddenly they're, you know, everything's changing and they can begin the beginning of the Goff era with a new coach and all that. So it's a pretty big year for him, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is kind of their first year in LA, and then next year they really become LA's team.
21 years of NFL head coaching experience for Jeff Fisher, 169, 156, and 1, and below 500 in the playoffs at 5-6. Scott, before we wrap up with the 49ers, just your overall, what do you think regarding either high drafted quarterbacks? You've watched obviously there in Seattle with Russell Wilson, not as high of a pick, but got thrown into the fire right away, and that certainly worked out for the Seahawks. Do you have a preference for whether these guys start right away, whether they sit and watch, and what makes the most sense with Goff and the Rams?
You know, I remember David Carr was at, when he got beat up his first year, whatever, and I kind of became one of those guys that was like, you got to just sit him on the bench for that first year, let him watch. You know, Aaron Rodgers kind of came up shortly thereafter, and it just seemed like, okay, now we finally have the blueprint. This is how it's supposed to work. But then I was just looking back when I was doing some of my research on the top, the number one picks, and all these guys going back to, you know, Jamarcus Russell was the one huge bust. But after him, since him, I think there's been 5 number one picks, and they all had decent success as rookies. So it's, you know, from Matt Stafford to Sam Bradford to, you know, last year, Jameis Winston, and, you know, these guys were decent their rookie year. I think at the end of every one of their rookie years, you definitely saw like, okay, they've gotten to this point and now they're ready to break out. And it didn't happen for all of them. And they all kind of, you know, took a step back for the most part after that. But I think they've proven, you know, the Andrew Lux and all these guys have proven that you can start a guy first game rookie year and they can have some semblance of success. So, you know, it sounds like Fisher doesn't really want to do that. And if he wants to go in with Case Keenum, then, you know, maybe that's what he'll do. But in this day and age when there's, you know, things like Twitter and the fans have so much access and it just seems like every move is such a big deal, especially in a place like Hollywood where all eyes are going to be on the team, I just can't see, you know, them struggling early on and him just leaving Jared Goff on the bench. It just seems like there's going to be enough of a push for Goff to start that I, you know, he's got to be out there maybe the first month or week five of the season. I would see it happening at some point. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know. You guys are better than me at sort of, you know, looking at these college guys and figuring out what kind of pros they'll be. So I don't know what kind of pro he'll be. And I don't know where he stacks up against the Andrew Lux and the Matt Staffords and those guys coming out. But I do know that guys have had success, and, you know, their receiving core isn't great, but they've got some playmakers there, you know, in Tavon Austin and Brian Quick, and they've got guys that have potential. So it's not like he's just coming in with nobody. So, you know, if he gets out there, I wouldn't be too surprised if he has a little bit of success. It'll probably be bumpy, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out there and, you know, they get an upset over a team with Goff having a good game, and then the next week they lose to the Niners. You know, who knows? That's just kind of the way it goes. But I think you kind of get that out of the way in year one, and then by year two, he's up and running.
Right, right. And one thing I think we can safely say, obviously, is that Goff and Carson Wentz are going to be kind of attached at the hip in every conversation regarding that draft for a long time. I'm a Carson Wentz guy, but, you know, what do I know? We'll have to wait and see. It doesn't look like either one of them is going to be playing right away. Scott, we're going to wrap up last and certainly least in this case, the 49ers. Why are 49ers fans going to tune in this season outside of their, you know, just commitment to their club? Where's the intrigue? Is it the Colin Kaepernick, Blaine Gabbert, Chip Kelly dynamic? What do you be monitoring the closest with regard to the 49ers as they turn it to Chip Kelly?
Oh, I think there's going to be plenty of intrigue with Chip Kelly there and yeah, the whole Kaepernick thing, but I'm not sure the 49ers are going to want to tune in for it. So, you know, the one thing I can say in their favor is Chip Kelly's one real good year as he came into a Philly team. And, you know, they had some of the guys, but he got rid of a few of those stars early on, and they still won games his first year. And then of course, you know, him as a personnel guy ended up being a disaster, and he won't have to do that in San Francisco. And so, you know, I'm not going to say the Niners are going to make noise this year, but if you take Chip Kelly only as a coach in a first year with a team with low expectations, those are the situations that he would thrive in. So, I wouldn't be too surprised if they won 6-7 games. I mean, heck, who knows? Maybe they win 7 games and we're talking about Chip Kelly for coach of the year candidate or something like that. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he overachieves this year only because the bar is so low for these guys. But, you know, I think the best case scenario would be for whatever reason for him and Kaepernick to just for that marriage to work. But it just seems like they spent so much of the offseason trying to get rid of Kaepernick that it just doesn't seem like, he's as much a Kelly guy as it looks like on paper. I mean, it just really looks like such a perfect fit. He looks like the NFL version of Marcus Mariota. And, you know, you can just see him doing that, you know, running the pistol and running all those little option plays. And it seems like it'd be so perfect that, you know, usually those things don't work out. But yeah, who knows, you know, maybe whatever reason they get into training camp and he starts running the system and he gets it and Chip Kelly falls in love with him and it ends up working out. But that's kind of their only hope. I mean, they have no receiving core, you know, Anquan Boldin was pretty much their only offensive threat last year, and now he's out there on the waiver wire, and they're out there in free agency. And then, you know, the defense has just lost so many guys over the years. I mean, Navarro Bowman, with one knee, is pretty much their only defensive guy right now. So, it's definitely an interesting marriage when you take a guy that's, you know, so many people are looking at in Chip Kelly and a team that's so, you know, untalented. But I think that's the best way to sort of wrap up the division too, is that, you know, you have these two teams that are Super Bowl contenders, and then you have these two teams that are completely not going to be in the picture, but they're two of the more interesting teams in football. You know, I think the San Francisco thing with Kelly and the Rams moving to LA, you're going to have to watch them all year long. And so in some ways they could overshadow the Arizona-Seattle thing, because that's going to be all about football, where the Kelly thing and the LA thing is all about the stuff we really like to talk about.
Yeah, there should be, like you said, no shortage of intrigue, probably quite the shortage of good football, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Scott, I don't know where the time goes. That is wrapping up our NFC West discussion. Lots of great stuff here, and we really do appreciate you joining us. I hope we can do it again somewhere shortly down the road.
All right. Anytime. It was my pleasure.
Thank you very much. That is Scott Johnson of USA Today Sports Weekly. He is the NFC West correspondent, dropping all kinds of good nuggets. And that's going to do it for this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast. Please join us again next week. We will head over to the AFC and bring you another division ahead of training camp. I'm Arthur Arkish, our producer John Solly. For everyone at Pro Football Weekly, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.